All right, welcome back. 239-1310. 239-1310. It's Afternoon News with Amos. Besides Canada Tuesdays, where we just set a date and we tell candidates this is the date you come, candidates who are running for statewide office or for congressional office, we got to be a little bit more flexible because they're running all over the state of Indiana. Greg Zeller is finishing his first term as Attorney General of the state of Indiana. He is running for re-election. He is the Republican candidate for Attorney General, and he joins me live. How you doing?
I'm doing great.
So why you want to do this for a second 4 years?
You know, you skipped over some of my credentials, but, you know, I was the chief deputy to my predecessor, Steve Carter, and I think some of it is having hired a lot of the staff,
right,
having worked in the trenches as one of the deputies.
Right.
You know, there's this respect among the lawyers who know that I used to be a good lawyer before I got elected. And then I have respect for what they do,
right?
Because I know what they do every day. So I think my commitment is to the people of the state, but really the team we put together, we've got over 140 lawyers. It's a big law firm, and I really enjoy it. I think we've done a great job, but we can always do better. That's why they call it practicing law. So I want to continue to serve the people of the state.
When you took over as Attorney General, you succeeded Steve Carter, who immortalized the no-call list here in Indiana. And Indiana was one of the first states that really got aggressive with the no-call list. Now the whole country has kind of some of it. A lot of states, you know, copied what Indiana did. How did you build upon what your predecessor created in terms of that part of consumer protection?
Well, in the 2010 legislative session, we extended the no-call list to cell phones. We've gone after much more aggressively some of the robocalls. But, you know, your listeners won't be shocked to hear that we're losing ground. I mean, now with the VOIP, some of the technology, the voice over internet protocol, where they can blast out literally 10,000 calls a minute, and they're in Jamaica, they're in Europe, they're someplace that I can't reach them. We're now starting to get inundated with some of those calls.
So on both regular no-call and on the robocalls?
Absolutely. No, I just came from a series of three roundtables, like hearings around the state. Where we were asking, you know, what more can we do? So what we came up with, you know, this VOIP is going to require some federal help. So I'm going to be testifying in front of the FTC, has what they call the Robo Summit coming up October 18th. So I'll be in Washington testifying. There's some things we really need the U.S. government to help with. But here locally, we're going to start going after companies that buy leads from people that have robocalled.
Right.
So you have to check and make sure if you're buying leads for somebody who wants lower interest rates on their credit card, you have to make sure they didn't blast out 10,000 robocalls to get those leads.
Now, speaking of robocalls, you don't like it during campaign season when candidates and campaigns do robocalls. So the first question is, in your campaign, how are you making sure that nobody's going to robocall on your behalf?
Well, you know, I do go around the state, and we have these things called victory centers. And I'll sit down with the volunteers who call on people. And again, there is an opportunity to call and say, please support my candidacy. And I think people get it. I mean, it's a big state, but I'm not going to blast out thousands of calls. People don't like that. And if you're not there in person, I do have volunteers that might be calling on people. And I think they all understand that we're trying to get our message out and we want their support. So you have to go on TV, you have to go on radio, and you have to call people. So there's a little bit of that, but we have to do it respectfully.
Because, you know, there's people that are waiting for the end of October, the 1st of November, hoping that they might get a call from Clint Eastwood, hoping that they might get a call from Bill Clinton, hoping they might get a call from Governor Romney, hoping they might get a call from President Obama. I think sometimes at the end of the campaign, people are so used to, well, am I going to get a celebrity call on behalf of a candidate? But it does get irritating if you really don't want to hear from that person.
Yeah, and I think there has to be a better way to do this. But, you know, right now, we're still in kind of the transition from the old style of campaigns to a little more modern, where people can pick and choose when they want to sit down and listen to stuff. So, you know, frankly, a lot of these, I'll bet of the 50 calls I made, most of them go to somebody's answering machine, and people can answer that when they get around to it. If there was a way that you could call just to leave that message. So, again, I don't want to ring somebody's phone that's busy, but go ahead and let it go to the answering machine, and I'll ask for people's support then.
How much of the Attorney General's office time is spent on consumer protection? I mean, one part you have to defend the state anytime somebody, you know, sues the state of Indiana for anything. But how much percentage of the time is on consumer protection?
It's roughly about a third of our office resource. So it's the one area where the legislature has made me the client. We serve the consumers, and we're also the attorney for consumers. So it's the one area that we really get to work directly. And I've tried to focus in my last 4 years on people that are more vulnerable. So you have seniors who seem to be the targets of a lot of scams, recent immigrants that may be more vulnerable, people that are having financial difficulty. They've got behind on their mortgage. They got behind on their credit cards. They're desperate, so they're a little more gullible, a little more susceptible to the scam artists.
And you're looking into this mess with BP, where there was some BP gas with some crud in it.
Yeah, that's been one where, you know, I trust the company with all the pressure from the public to maintain their reputation within the marketplace. But I have to verify, you know, trust but verify. That's kind of the theme. So we've been meeting with them, Attorney General Lisa Madigan's office
in Illinois,
J.B. Van Hollen up in Michigan or in Wisconsin. So the three of us had a meeting up in Chicago and went through what are they doing, what else can they be doing. So we're going to have to stay on top of it because, again, I'm not in the trust business. I do think there's a lot of pressures on the company to do the right thing. But you don't mind if I stand there and make sure you do it.
239-1310, 239-1310. This afternoon's name is, you may have a question for the Attorney General of Indiana. He is running for re-election. If the people of Indiana re-elect you, are there new and different things that you would be doing as Attorney General or just same old, same old?
Oh, no. I think if you don't have an agenda for the next 4 years, you probably shouldn't run. So, you know, one of the things that I've really developed in the last 4 years is what we call the outreach office. There's a group of, first we started with Vista Volunteers. We got a grant to do that. That sped up the process. Now we have a network where we literally go into the communities and do training sessions, do speaking, where we tell people, here are the ways that the office can serve you. So instead of just staying in Indianapolis, we get out into the neighborhoods, into the communities, and try to reach people so they don't have to try to figure out where they go for help.
239-1310, 239-1310. This afternoon's name is back to the phones. And is it Mohammed? Hi there.
Okay, yeah. Amos, you had made a comment that you would ask the Attorney General to see what, if anything, he could do to dealing with some of the unsolved crimes in our community. And one major crime that took place 25 years ago on the 24th of this month is the Michael Taylor case, which many of the officials, all the way up to the FBI, Justice Department, all of them said after the court decision in the civil courts that the police evidence had involvement in it, there has been no movement on it, and it's 25 years and 11 days from now. So what can he do, if anything?
That's a good question. And I think sometimes people, your attorney general, get confused on what is your jurisdiction in criminal cases or cold cases or cases where there could have been malfeasance by local officials?
Well, if it's criminal charges or claims against people in their individual capacity, we really wouldn't be involved in that. If there's a civil rights claim against a state actor, so if it's a state police officer, we would be the attorney that represents the police department. So, again, remember, as part of our adversarial system, there's got to be a lawyer dedicated to both sides of the argument. I'll usually be on the law enforcement, the prosecutor. The judges get sued. When any of those people get sued in any court, the attorney general's who steps in.
Is there confusion when you go out and talk to voters who think that in Indiana the attorney general is like everybody's lawyer as opposed to in Indiana, under the Indiana Constitution, you're the lawyer representing and defending 99 times out of 100 the state.
Well, that's right. I represent their representatives. Mm-hmm. So they're legislators. You elect them. I represent them to the best of my skill and ability, except that one-third of my role, which is in consumer protection. If you're a purchaser, if you're a consumer, if you engage in commerce and you're the one reaching into your billfold, I represent those consumers.
Brother Muhammad, I think in answer to your question, the Attorney General system in Indiana is not like the Federal Justice Department, where the Federal Justice Department has the ability to go in, you know, and prosecute folk.
All right. Thank you so very much.
Which is, like I said, it's a strange system, but maybe one day the legislature will change the Constitution that it has to go to the voters in Indiana, you know, twice over a four-year period. Let me go to John at 239-1310. Hi, John.
Yeah, hi. Thanks, Amos, for taking my call.
Uh-huh.
Since you're on robocalls and that sort of situation here, I have information. I have a question.
Okay.
I received a number, a call from this number, 412-723-5999. They said they were calling to update my insurance, my Anthem insurance, and they needed to for me to call this number. So I hung up. I went later in the day. I went to a payphone and I called the number. This is that number: 877-815-3706, just to see where this led me.
Mm-hmm.
Sure enough, they asked for information about my date of birth and so forth, important information that I wouldn't give out. But my question is, since you maybe have the power and authority to track down who these numbers belong to, isn't there something that you can be done to track these callers down and find out and investigate them?
And I bet you don't have insurance with Anthem, right?
Well, I do.
You do? Hmm. And that's a weird
one.
But
that wasn't their number.
Ah. Okay. Let me let the Attorney General respond.
All right, well, the answer is yes. I mean, those are the types of leads we look for. Just this year, we've had 14,000 people file complaints with our office. Now, some of those numbers, if you've called back and gotten somebody, that's a hot lead. That's the type of thing that we'll work on. Unfortunately, with the new VOIP, they can have a number show up like on your caller ID, and they're really calling from Jamaica, but it looks like it's a 317 area code. So the numbers you've given me and the fact that somebody actually answered, that's a good lead, and that's something we can follow up on.
So, John, hold on, and Chris will get back with you off the air. Don't hang up, and give him your name and a number where you can be reached during the day, and we'll turn that over to the Attorney General.
Okay.
Okay? When you mentioned that, we had, in other words, if somebody calls from overseas and tries to scam Americans, that's not illegal yet?
Oh, it's illegal. I'm just saying the enforcement by a state actor against someone overseas. I don't have the long arm that way. I can get them if they're in Florida. And we found a lot of scam artists somehow go to Florida.
It's warmer.
But if they're in Jamaica, I'm having trouble.
So we need to. So the federal government at some point is going to have to revise treaties with other countries.
They currently have that ability.
But Uncle has to do that.
That's right. And there's a cooperative relationship. I mean, our complaints have doubled. That's why I had those hearings around the state, because I know when we're losing ground and we've got to do more. I can't just sit here and say we're doing all we can. So we're going to have a few things that we'll ask the legislature to help give me a few more tools. I'm going to go to Washington and ask them to pick up their side of it. But we got to do more, because people in this state really expect a little more privacy.
This may be a dumb question. Is there a concern down the road of robo-texting?
Oh, they already have that capacity. It's not if you got the one on the $1,000 Walmart gift card, for instance. Now, that's a classic scam. Nobody got the gift card,
right,
but they're trying to get you to respond. The one advice I give everybody, when you get the robocall, when you get a text message that's a scam, you know, your temptation is to yell into the phone or punch a bunch of buttons. Or I've heard people say, I get them back, I let it sit there and just don't answer and let it go and go and go, waste their time. That's not the right thing. Hang up immediately, because what they do is they sell the information. If you stay on the line, they'll sell the information that you're one of the people that listen to the pitch. If you punch buttons, they're selling the information that you respond. I don't care what button you push. Hang up the minute you see or hear that it's a robocall.
Hang up and then write down whatever number may come up on your call, on the caller ID.
That's right.
239-1310. Back to the phones. And Kim, hi there.
Hi, Amos, and hello to your guest.
Hi.
I wanted to ask a question. If you have some issues or some concerns about looking into the employment practices of the IP, where there are family members employed within that organization, that you really can't, you know, have a fair and impartial investigation into whatever because everybody's related. And then also, you know, that with having so many family members and that employed, you know, if that doesn't allow for outsiders too much to get a job, you know, in that particular area or field, because, you know, it's such a close-knit in relations, you know, employment there. Are you the person that looks into stuff like that? Or if you, you know, wanted to know, okay, how come they have so many family members in there where other regular street people can't get a job?
All right, well, if it's in the private sector, we wouldn't have any role. So if it's a private company and somebody wants to hire all their own family members, if it's inside of government, there are some statutes and some regulations that deal with nepotism. So I'm hiring my spouse, my children, my, you know, my friends or something. So there may be some things we do. Either the Inspector General, which does this, the other is the if you're insider trading, essentially, so monies go within the family. Sometimes the State Board of Accounts, who would be one of my clients, would also ask us to do an investigation. Department of Labor comes to mind if it's a wage and hour that you've got issues with.
Kim, is this a government agency or a company, a regular company?
Well, I guess it's I don't know, but it isn't like say, like the IPD, City, County Building, all that stuff, isn't that a government agency?
Oh, that's government. Now, that's government all day long. And there are certain anti-nepotism, you know, statutes, and that would be something where you would have to start if you feel there's wrongdoing with the Marion County Prosecutor.
Or the Corporation Council.
Or the Corporation Council for the City of Indianapolis.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you. 239-1310. We'll take a break. We'll be back with our remaining moments with the Attorney General of Indiana, Greg Zeller, running for re-election after these. The Attorney General today, they're after him because he because he's the state's lawyer, and he always is supposed to defend the state of Indiana whenever they get sued or when he has to, you know, go before the Indiana Court of Appeals or the Indiana Supreme Court. So earlier today, the Attorney General, you know, indicated that he's going to assume representing the Department of Child Services in appeals, which is the way he represents the Bureau of Motor Vehicles or the Secretary of State's office or a whole lot of other state agencies, including the governor, if they're sued and it's got to go to an appeal.
Well, that's right. Really what the idea is, when you're in front of the Court of Appeals, you're arguing the law. This is not arguing the facts.
Mm-hmm.
So the facts have been established at a trial. Now it's up on appeal, and you're talking about the law, and you need the Attorney General to harmonize all the voices. We don't need one agency representing that the law says this, another agency or another part of government arguing this. So one of the jobs of the Attorney General is to harmonize the voice of the state in all the courts, at least at the appellate level. So the Supreme Court, the courts of appeals, the federal courts, those are the things where you really need one agency, essentially a big law firm that I run inside of government, so that the state speaks with one voice.
And DCS was doing their own appeals?
They have been. When they carved off DCS from FSSA, right. It was a brand new entity. They were hiring their own lawyers. We were working with them on, because they represent children in need of services.
Right.
And that's really not, we were still kind of fixing our own office when Carter mm-hmm. took over. But at this point, I think we've developed a strong office. I'm capable of assuming all those appeals. I'm going to testify on Monday to the summer study DCS and essentially offer that my office can play a larger role. These are difficult subjects. It's not something that I'm anxious to do, but I think it's a responsibility where we can protect. Again, when I talked to you earlier about looking for the most vulnerable people that we can protect, mm-hmm. I think the children is where we start.
Yeah, so it's no different than at the federal level what Attorney General Holder represents and the Department of Justice represents all federal agencies on appeal. And if something goes to the Supreme Court, it's the Solicitor General representing the United States, not some lawyer
That's
from
right.
off the street.
That's exactly right. And again, we've allowed them to do their own work in the local courts, serving children at the county level. What we're doing now is reassuming the appellate work so that whenever there's a challenge that goes up and they're going to talk about the law, this mm-hmm. is not what happened. This is how does the law, how is it to be read? So we need one voice that kind of assumes that argument in every area of government, and that's the role of the Attorney General.
So those of you in the news media, I hear you all are camped out downtown waiting for the Attorney General. He's on his way, and we'll schedule you back in October.
All right.
We'll find an empty space with the candidates
Anytime.
Coming in. And if people want more information about your campaign, Greg Zeller running for re-election as Attorney General of Indiana, which is the standard closing question for all candidates, how do they get a hold of your campaign?
You go to Z for AG.
Z4, the number 4,
AG.com.
That may be the simplest candidate website of the year. Z for Zeller or Zorro, the number 4, AG.com. He's a Republican candidate for Attorney General, the incumbent. Greg Zeller, thanks very much for being with us. Glad
to
have you.
Glad to be with you.